So this is text 59. In this way, Krishna and Balaram passed their childhood age in Rajabhumi by engaging in activities of childish play, such as playing hide and seek, constructing a make-believe bridge on the ocean, and jumping here and there like monkeys. This is in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 11th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna. Text chapter 12, the killing of the demon Agasura. This chapter describes in detail Krishna's pastimes of killing Agasura. One day, Krishna wanted to enjoy a picnic lunch within the forest, and therefore he went out early into the forest with his other cowherd boys, accompanied by their respective groups of calves. While they were enjoying their picnic, Agasura, the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura, appeared there, desiring to kill Krishna and his companions. The demon, who had been sent by Kamsa, assumed the form of a python, expanding himself to a length of 8 miles and to the height of a mountain, his mouth seeming to extend from the surface of the earth to the heavenly planets. Having assumed this feature, Agasura lay on the ground. Krishna's friends, the cowherd boys, thought that the demon's form was one of the beautiful spots of Vrindavan. Thus they wanted to enter into the mouth of the gigantic python. The gigantic figure of the python became a subject for their sporting pleasure, and they began to laugh, confident that even if the figure was dangerous, Krishna was there to protect them. This way they proceeded toward the mouth of the gigantic figure. Krishna knew everything about Agasura, and therefore he wanted to forbid his friends to enter the demon's mouth. But in the meantime, all the coward boys, along with their groups of calves, entered the mouth of that gigantic figure. Krishna was waiting outside, and Agasura was waiting for Krishna, thinking that as soon as Krishna entered, he would close his mouth so that everyone would die. While waiting for Krishna, he refrained from swallowing the boys. In the meantime, Krishna was thinking of how to save the boys and kill Agasura. Thus he entered the mouth of the gigantic Asura, and when he was within the mouth, the demon's mouth, along with his friends, he expanded his body to such an extent that the Asura suffocated and died. After this, Krishna, by casting his nectarian glance upon his friends, brought them back to life, and with pleasure they all came out unhurt. Thus Krishna encouraged all the demigods and expressed their pleasure and happiness. For a crooked, sinful person, there is no scope for sayuja mukti, becoming one with the effulgence of Krishna. But because the Supreme Personality of Godhead entered the body of Agasura, by his touch, this demon got the opportunity to merge into the existence of Brahman effulgence and thus attain Suyuja Mukti. When this pastime was performed, Krishna was only 5 years old. 1 year later, when he was 6 years old, he stepped out into the Pagunda age, this pastime was disclosed to the inhabitants of Braj. Pariksit Maharaj inquired, "Why is it that the pastime was disclosed only after 1 year, yet the inhabitants of Braja thought that it had been performed that very day?" With this question, the 12th canto chapter ends. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "O King, one day Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. Having risen early in the morning, he blew his bugle made of horn and woke all the coward boys and calves with its beautiful sound. Thus Krishna and the boys, keeping their respective groups of calves before them, proceeded from Brajabhumi to the forest." Generally, when people blow a buffalo horn, it's not such a nice sound. They wake up like an alarm clock. But here it says Krishna's blowing of the buffalo horn was so nice that they woke up due to his beautiful sound. So maybe one day we'll be able to hear the sound of Krishna's buffalo horn. At that time, hundreds and thousands of coward boys came out of their respective homes in Brajabhumi and joined Krishna, keeping them before them. There are hundreds and thousands of groups of calves. The boys were very beautiful, and they were equipped with lunch bags, bugles, flutes, and sticks for controlling the calves. Text number 3. Krishna Vatsara Asangyatar Yudhi Kritya Sva Vatsakan Charayantor Balilabir Vijarus Tatra Tatraha. Krishna, of Lord Krishna, Vatsai, along with the calves, Asankhya Tai, unlimited, Yuti Kritya, assemble them, Svavatsakan, personal calves, Charayanta, executing Arba Lilabi by boyhood pastimes. Vijaru enjoyed Tatra Tatra here and there. He Aha indeed. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Along with the coward boys and their own groups of calves, Krishna came out with an unlimited number of calves assembled. Then all the boys began to sport in the forest in a greatly playful spirit. Prabhupada. In this verse, the word Krishna Vatsara Asankhyatai are significant. The word asankhyata means unlimited. Krishna's calves were unlimited. We may speak of hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, billions, trillions, tens of trillions, and so on. But when we go further to speak of numbers impossible for us to count, we are speaking of unlimited numbers. Such unlimited numbers are indicated here by the word asankhyatai. Krishna is unlimited. His potency is unlimited. His cows and calves are unlimited. And his space is unlimited. Therefore, he is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Param Brahman. The word Brahman means unlimited. And Krishna is the supreme unlimited Parabrahman. Therefore, we should not consider the statements of this verse to be mythological. They are factual, but inconceivable. Krishna can accommodate an unlimited number of calves, an unlimited measurement of space. This is neither mythological nor false, but if we study Krishna's potency with our limited knowledge, that potency will never be possible to understand. Takshi Krishna Namadi Na Braved Krayam Indriyai Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 12109. Our senses cannot perceive how he could keep an unlimited number of calves and cows and have unlimited space in which to do so. But this is answered in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Evam prabho priyanam cha damascha samayascha cha vi avichintya prabhavavad atra Kinchin na Doragatam. Sri Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita states that since everything about Krishna is unlimited, nothing is impossible for him. It is in this sense that we have to understand this verse. Parashya Shaktir Vividaiva Shuite Svabhavaki Jnana Balakriyacha Itasyas Tasya charyam charanam chavidite, etasamascha pyadikascha drishyate, Parashya Shaktirvi Vidaiva Shriyate Swabhavaki Gyana Bala Kriyacha. The Supreme Lord has nothing to do. The Tasya Karyam Karanam Chavidite. Because no one is seen to be equal or greater than him. Nitasya karyam karanam chavidite. Nitatsamastra drishyate. Parashya shaktir vivitaiva shruyate. Svabhavaki gyana bala kriyacha. He has nothing to do. No one is equal or greater than him. And by his multifaceted energies, everything is performed automatically. So this is called achintya, inconceivable, because our general experience is in the material world where everything is limited. The scientists imagine that the universe is unlimited, but it's not unlimited. It has its measurement. But they don't know that there is unlimited universes. And they don't know that the unlimited universes are just in a small part of the spiritual world, which is actually unlimited, with unlimited Vaikuntha planets. And all those Vaikuntha planets, along with the material world, could all fit into Goloka Vrindavan. So that's quite a big lotus flower. So the good news is that there's plenty of room for us. There's vacancies. If you go back to the spiritual world, there's no sign, sorry, no room. Come back next life of Brahma. Good luck. There's plenty of room for everyone. And the space is always expanding. And everyone can be, just like it says, Krishna has unlimited cows or calves. And similarly, coward boys could also have unlimited calves, asankhya, padma, koti, ashesha, etc., etc. So the coward boys also. So how is that possible? It's definitely not possible in the material concept of life, of which we're in. And therefore, naturally, we think, what are they talking about? It doesn't make any sense. Of course it doesn't make any sense, because nothing real makes any sense to us. The only thing that makes sense to us is illusion. And we have plenty of that, so our illusion is practically unlimited. Therefore, generally speaking, we always have to go back to what we can actually experience, what our actual faith is. And faith in things which are outside of the realm of material energy. Like, for instance, Krishna begins with Deinosmi nita dehe komaram yovanam jara nita dehantara praptira diryas tatra namuyati. So we just understand that one verse, we liberate it. But we're not liberated. Anyhow, we can try to understand the verse, even if we're not liberated. But that will at least put us in the path, hopefully it'll put us into the path of liberation, trying to become liberated. When we understand that our body's changing, and we're not changing, that means we're under illusion. Sorry to tell, we're not trying to insult anyone, we're just calling things as they are. We're all under illusion because we think we're this body. But we're not the body. No matter how much the illusion is, it doesn't make us into the body. But the illusion is such, we don't really care that we're eternal. It doesn't really make so much of a difference. What matters to us is, how is our material life going? Do I have something to eat today? Do I have a place to sleep? Am I going to mate today, or am I going to defend? How am I going to defend against all these people who don't properly respect me? So that's our main concern. Not that I'm not liberated; I'm an illusion. I have to leave this body, and I have to take another one, and I'll still be an illusion if I don't get out of illusion now. It's not that at the time of death we get out of illusion necessarily. So we have to work on it now. So whether Krishna has a billion, a trillion, 100 trillion cows, What difference does it make, really? Let Krishna have so many cows. He likes milk. He's not a vegan. All the residents of Vrindavan, they want plenty of yogurt and ghee and gulab jamuns and paneer. There's no problem. They don't even get fat. If they are fat, they stay fat eternally. They don't worry about it. So, what does it matter to us? Why should we envy Krishna? Why does he have so many calves? We can't even take care of one calf. And Krishna has unlimited, but they're all happy. You don't find a depressed calf amongst Krishna's cowards. You know, why does Krishna neglect me? No, because Krishna loves everyone, and his affection and love is felt by everyone. All the unlimited calves, Krishna is unlimited, so he can have an unlimited relationship with the calves. Just like in our heart, there's Krishna, in everyone's heart. So it's not that because Krishna is in Mukunda's, Prabhu's heart, therefore he doesn't pay any attention to me or anyone else. No, we can already see that Krishna is unlimited. He can have unlimited relationships. Because otherwise, how is it that everyone is receiving knowledge? Everyone has their vision of things. That means that Krishna is giving them a certain amount of awareness of reality. Sometimes he gives remembrance of things, and sometimes Krishna gives forgetfulness of things to everyone, according to one's desire and what one deserves. And he doesn't make mistakes. It's not that Krishna, therefore Krishna, Arjuna calls Krishna, oh, infallible one. He's perfect in all his relationships. So we don't have to worry about if we go there and Krishna's herding the calves, the cows, he's just going to neglect me. I'll be doing service in some kitchen, washing dishes forever. Krishna doesn't even know when I exist in the spiritual world. They mentioned, you know, did you hear about Gopi so-and-so? No, I never heard. What is she doing? Oh, she's washing pots. Oh, too bad. No, Krishna eternally has a relation with all of us. If he's going to accompany us when we become a hog, he doesn't leave us. You think, oh my God, this foolish soul has become a hog. I think I'll see him next life of Brahma. No, Krishna even accompanies us when we become a hog. And he tells us which is the choicest stool to eat, if we have the karma. He gives us intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness, even as a hog or as a mosquito. By this devotee, they just had, you know, 5 gulab jamuns. Their blood is really super sweet. You'll really enjoy. So Krishna, he helps even the mosquito find some happiness in this world. So if that's what we're looking for, Krishna will help. And if we're looking for the spiritual life, we don't have to know how many calves or etc. But we have to have some assurance that there is a Krishna and he's someone beyond our conception. But he'll reveal himself within our conception if we want him to. But we shouldn't declare that I want to know Krishna completely, otherwise I don't want to know him at all. We're never going to know Krishna completely, but we'll know him a lot more than we know him now. So that should be our aim, is to know as much about Krishna as possible, and ultimately to become conscious of him, to act in such a way as that Krishna reveals himself. So however extent we become qualified, Krishna can reveal himself. But here Krishna is saying that here the Bhagavatam is saying Krishna is unlimited and even his calves are unlimited. So we shouldn't think it's mythological. Because if we use our intelligence, we can see it's logical. Otherwise, how could one person be in everyone's heart right now in this room and perfectly give everyone exactly what they deserve and according to what they desire? So that's already beyond anyone's conception. But it's real, it's perceivable, it's logical. It's happening right now within our experience. So therefore, if something which is way beyond our experience in relationship to, for instance, how can we understand how Krishna is in every living entity? And all the ants that are underneath this building or whatever living entities are living in the building with us. He's in their heart too. And nothing happens by accident. Krishna is perfectly arranging everything according to his material energy. Therefore, it's inconceivable, achintya. So the Bhagavatam is also achintya. How Krishna can live in the heart of the living entity and at the same time become, put Mount Mandara on his back in the form of a tortoise. Matsya, korma. These are all inconceivable. So, we should not reject them and think that this is mythological, nor do we blindly accept them, because we should understand we're just disqualified to experience them fully. We're not even qualified to understand we're not this body fully, but to speak of who Krishna is. So it's due to our disqualification that we don't understand things, and therefore we should try to become qualified, that's all, so that we can gradually understand things more clearly. But that's going to be a gradual process, so it takes some humility. Just like if you're in prison for a certain number of years, you've been condemned to prison because of your misdeeds, you can't think that, why did they put, you know, I shouldn't be in prison, I should be out of prison, I should try to break out of prison. You're not going to be able to break out of this prison. It's just not possible. All we can do is become obedient prisoners and wait out our prison cell, our prison term, so that one day we'll become liberated. We can begin normal life again. So that's called patience. And by patiently listening and try to understand with our intelligence, so that we actually accept Krishna. Otherwise, we can find so many demons. Kamsa, he thought Krishna was an ordinary boy. Even when he lifted Govardhan Hill, he was still thinking he's just a child, an ordinary child. When he killed the Kaliya serpent, or fought with the Kaliya serpent, Kamsa thought he was just ordinary. When he killed Kulyavalpita, the gigantic elephant, Kamsa thought he was just some ordinary boy. Maybe extraordinarily strong, but not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He just couldn't accept it, because he was envious of Krishna. So we're also envious of Krishna. But we have to try to overcome our envy by practicing devotional service and try to get linked up with Krishna's desire to help others. Because not only we're envious of Krishna, if we're envious of Krishna, then we'll be envious of every living entity. But if we work for Krishna's mission, because Krishna is non-envious, therefore we work for his mission, he'll also make us gradually non-envious also. Otherwise, just living normally in the material world, with our limited consciousness, our limited understanding, our being enamored with this body and its activities. We love everything about this body. Even the way everyone may think the way we smell is not very pleasant, but we think we smell nice. So we're in love with this body. We hope it's we want it to become unlimited, although it's limited in every sense. So that's called illusion. Still, even under illusion, if we try to utilize this body following the directions of the acharyas, gradually we'll get out of this illusion, and one day, instead of being in love with this body, we'll be in love with Krishna. And we'll see how the body is being used by Krishna, and therefore we'll appreciate even the activities of the body, because there won't be material activities, there'll be spiritual activities. So all we do is have to try to perform spiritual activities, follow the directions of our acharyas, disciples of succession, and gradually we'll come under the spiritual energy by the simple process of devotional service. And then we'll love Krishna, we'll love all living entities, and whether Krishna is unlimited or not, won't make any difference to us. All we know is that Krishna's, at least he's unlimitedly affectionate and beautiful and nice to us and to everyone. And that will be more important than exactly how many calves he has. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Hare Krishna, thank you for the lecture. So, on this topic, because we are not this body, we are pure spirit. So I was talking with someone, I met someone, gave them books, and they're talking, and they could accept that somehow we are a spirit soul, that we're not this body, and that we cannot be the controller, but they couldn't accept that there's another world, spiritual world, where and that is our home, and we can live there peacefully. And how can we progress this kind of people who are...
Give them some prasadam. Give them to chant Hare Krishna. How can they accept something they have no experience of? Yeah, of course they're not going to accept it. We don't talk about those things with people because it's just beyond their conception. Even this idea that we're not this body, they can accept. They have enough intelligence for that. So tell them there's a process, the chanting Hare Krishna, especially, they can practice to themselves. And gradually, what is actually real and what is not real will be revealed to them. But the spiritual world is, even we don't know anything about the spiritual world really, except what it says. But how much experience we have, our experience of the spiritual world is right now here in the temple. As much as we practice Krishna consciousness and experience the spiritual energy, then this world becomes part of the spiritual world. That's our experience. But other than to be aware of the spiritual world is, you have to be on a different platform of experience. People not even on the platform of Brahman experience, what to speak of, the experience necessary to understand the spiritual, to accept the spiritual world. We theoretically understand it exists, but we don't really, if we had the experience of it, then we'd actually be mad after going there. But for as far as we're concerned, you know, if we got a choice between going to the spiritual world and Hawaii, we might choose Hawaii. Just like when Tukaram, his wife, I mean, Tukaram was always in ecstasy. His wife must have noticed it. But when Tukaram was going to the airplane, came here to take Tukaram to the spiritual world, his wife wasn't even interested in going. Obviously, she didn't know very much. Then it kind of, when it was too late, then she realized maybe it would be a good idea to go with my husband, but it was too late already. So, generally, we just say we don't, you know, it's something that you can understand intellectually if you read these books. You don't have to blindly accept it. You don't have to blindly reject it. It has to come within your realm of experience to understand it. Even somewhat. But you could always say, if God has created this world where we have all these suffering souls living out the karma, and there's all the living entities here eternally, there must be a world where he's living there and enjoying unlimitedly with his liberated souls. If we have conditioned souls, we must also have liberated souls. And if we have liberated souls, they must live somewhere. They're not beggars on the street. There must be some place for them to live. So that's, they live in the spiritual world, just like we're living here in Krishna's material world. And if they don't understand that, then try to sell them another book. Tell them to come to the program, take some prasadam. They take some prasadam, then they'll understand what the spiritual world is about. Anything else? Khala Grantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.